We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's continue what we were talking about earlier in the show. Who has more to gain from this spring, Gino Gadulli or Tyler Buchner?
I feel like this is a good question. I feel like Gino Gadulli is what I'm going to go with. But it's tough. I mean, this is a really – because Tyler Buchner's got a brand new coach. And so, you know, what does that look like for him? He's going to be able to impress a different guy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of pressure is he feeling in this quarterback competition when everybody outside the program assumes that Sam Hartman's going to be the starter? You know, where does that put him? From the practice that I saw, he's spinning it pretty darn good and better than I've ever seen him do it in a Notre Dame uniform. Granted, it's practice, but he's putting the ball in some pretty good places and it's pretty impressive, right? But I feel like Gino has the most to gain because he knows nothing about this room going in, and he's got a ton to gain from just being the quarterback's coach at Notre Dame. So I'm going to go with Gino. We know he's not going to be second string because there's only one quarterback coach. So I'm going to go with him.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that side of it because he is. He's walking into this fresh, and he's got basically four new guys to learn, you know, what from the top on down, Hartman, Buchner, Angeli, and Minchie. And, you know, like he himself, when we talked to him a couple of weeks ago, I think the question was more about Hartman or Buchner. And he said, hey, don't forget about Angeli because he's in there too. And, you know, like the things that he was doing. I just have to go with Buchner though, because if Tyler Buchner is going to have a legitimate chance in this quarterback competition, it's going to be because of the work that he puts in this fall and whatever eyes he can open this fall to show where he is. Like right now, he is on as equal a footing as he is ever going to be with Sam Hartman because of the fact that I think you mentioned earlier, Hartman comes in, new system that he's got to learn and all that stuff. He's got the experience, but it's a new system for him. It's, you know, Tyler Buchner, like, the system for him, I think a lot of it is going to be the same. The terminology, as they have said, is going to be the same. So right now, it's about what can Tyler Buchner do to keep himself on an even plane with Sam Hartman, or at least as close to even as possible. He's got everything to gain, nothing to lose this spring. Just let it rip. So I go with him just a little bit more. I understand what you're saying with Gadulli, and that's why I asked the question.
Because I could have gone either direction. There's no question about it, and I could have been convincing either way. But I will also say it is 100% in Tyler Buchner's wheelhouse to force the issue to get him on the field this year. Not saying that he'll be the starter, but you can't keep a stallion in the stable if he can prove to the coaching staff that he is a stallion, right? You can't keep that kind of talent on the sideline just backing up Sam Hartman. You've got to force yourself onto the field. And I think he has the opportunity to do that. I'm not saying he's going to force himself into the number one position. I'm saying he could force himself onto the field, which would be huge for him and the program, frankly.
I mean, we are not, Marshall says, not being judgmental, but this is the same talk last year with Tyler Buchner. Will this be the year that it translates to the field? I mean, the difference is last year there was an actual, I think, more even, like he was the one with more talent, but the competition was more even between him and Drew Pine than it, at least it should be with him and Sam Hartman. If he is playing even with Sam Hartman, it's because of one, his talent, and two, that he's put in a lot of work and he's made a lot of progress to get there. So,
sure.
I mean,
sure.
I don't think it has to translate to the field necessarily for this to be a successful spring and even going into the fall for Buchner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of the fact that you've got a sixth-year guy out there.
Sure. He's competing. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Fill in the blank. Notre Dame defensive coordinator Al Golden meets with the media Wednesday morning. The top question you would have for Al Golden is blank.
Give me your linebacker depth chart now. Realizing he would never answer that, right? But isn't that what we all want to know? Like, we all want to know where these young guys stack up compared to the guys that are returning from last year. Like, what is, you know, who's impressing you from X group, right? And we're not talking about the returning starters. We're talking about everybody else. Who's impressed you? What does it look like? Are those guys going to get on the field? Now, he's going to word salad that, but that's the answers that I want. Those are the questions I would ask.
Yeah. He's a good deflector sometimes.
Sure.
If you ask those kind of open-ended, you know, like not just open-ended, but broad questions, you know, like, who's impressed you? He'll say, well, they've all impressed me.
And yeah, right.
Kind of go into, exactly. You know, those kind of things. I think that I would just, my thing would be, what does he need to see from guys like Jalen Sneed and Prince Kali for them, you know, to, what does he need to see from them this spring for them to potentially be in the mix heading to next fall?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, because they're the guys that everyone wants to know about, right? And you can throw Ziegler and, you know, those kind of guys in there as well. But I think those two guys specifically, because of the fact that one's going to be a junior, one's going to be a sophomore, and they've got a ton of talent. And those are the guys we get asked about the most. What does he need to see from those two guys this spring?
Because eventually we're going to start asking about different guys because they're never going to get on the field. Like, that's how it feels. And so, like, we're asking about these guys because they are arriving into their window of where they need to be productive players at Notre Dame, or they're going to leave. I mean, that's where we are with the transfer portal and the way things operate, right? So where are those guys? Have you communicated with them, like, where they are? You know, what does it look like from your perspective as the defensive coordinator and as the linebacker coach? Where are these guys?
I concur. Totally. Yeah. And that's, we'll see tomorrow. They're bringing out three linebackers.
Right.
I believe Prince Kali is going to be one of them. Mm-hmm. They're going to save some of the other linebackers for later on in the spring, I guess. But we'll get three of them tomorrow anyway. Josh says, great interview. And then he gave us a super chat. Thank you.
Bam.
Super sticker. Thank you very much, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Lamar Jackson wants the Ravens to trade him. And he is the talk right now. He is like the Aaron Rodgers stuff is hit the back burner. It's all become about Lamar Jackson over the last week or two. Colts are apparently in play for a trade for Lamar Jackson. Here's what Colts general manager Chris Ballard said when he was asked about Jackson this week. Quote, anytime a special player is available, which he is, you've got to do the work, all right? I'm not going to get into deep discussions on where it's at or what we're doing or what we might do. But what I'll tell y'all is he's a really good player, a really special player, but you never know how any of this will work out. End quote. So, Vince, if you're the Colts, how far would you be willing to go to get Lamar Jackson?
Not very, if I'm being honest. I would not leverage the future of the franchise to bring this guy in. I just wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't give away a bunch of number one picks. I wouldn't give him a boatload of money that's going to cripple your franchise moving forward if all of your money is going to be towards a quarterback, because I don't trust him to be healthy enough to make a huge difference in Indianapolis for the long term. I just don't. And we've just seen it time and time again with various mobile quarterbacks, and they've been really special early on in their career, and then they're just injury prone and they are not special moving forward. And that's my guess, is that's the number one thing that the Ravens are worried about and why they didn't want to give him all the money that he was looking for, because they don't want to leverage their future. And so if I'm a Colts fan, I'm real worried right now, because it sounds an awful lot like to me that he's their number one option going into this season.
Well,
that's a problem to me.
And I get what you're saying about the injuries. I like the, you know, like I said, initially when we started talking about Lamar Jackson a couple of weeks ago, I wasn't as high on it. What was my rationale? You had to cater the whole offense to Lamar Jackson. Sure. But you've got Shane Steichen, who came from the Eagles system, who just worked with Jalen Hurts. And, like, you had Jonathan Taylor. You know, like, it makes sense for who they have as their new head coach. If you were going to cater – the guy is only 26 years old and he's already won an MVP. So, like, I would not mind giving up a couple of first-round draft picks. It's the money that I think is going to be the issue. What he wants, you know, in addition to what you have to give up to get him, it's the money that you're going to have to pay to sign him that's the issue right now, because you've got a quarterback coming out of that first contract.
Yeah,
and he wants to be paid. And that's where the Colts could really be hamstrung. And like Jim Irsay has said, Jim Irsay doesn't want to pay the guaranteed money. And I don't blame him, you know. And that's like the whole Deshaun Watson deal last year that the Cleveland Browns, they set a precedent. And that's what happens in the NFL. As soon as the first guy get it, everybody wants it. And so now everybody wants this guaranteed money. That would be the biggest holdup for me. The draft picks, I don't mind. But it's the guaranteed money that I would not want to give a guy like Lamar Jackson for what you just outlined, because of, like, he didn't finish last season healthy. You know?
Right.
So, like,
that's what worries me,
that
man.
That would be the worry.
I mean, the Colts have had just terrible luck with trying to go out and find a quarterback over the last, what, four seasons?
Right.
At this point,
and they've gone out. They've got these guys on their last legs. You know, Matt Ryan, obviously, Philip Rivers, and that didn't, like, Rivers worked to an extent, but I don't even think that they were as good as they thought they were going to be with him. But, like, again, like, if Lamar Jackson stays healthy, you could have this guy for the next 10 to 12 years. That's why
if he could stay healthy.
Yeah, that's why I wouldn't mind giving up the first round picks to get him.
I don't have any faith that he's going to be able to stay healthy. That's, I guess, my biggest issue with this moving forward. If he proves me wrong, then you're right. He can be a franchise quarterback for the next decade, no doubt. And if you wanted to have a successful NFL franchise, you need to find that quarterback. Whoever that guy is, you need to be able to find him.
See, and, like, look at Cam Newton. Like, Cam Newton had way more body armor than Lamar Jackson. You know, Lamar Jackson is still a twig, basically. Like, Cam Newton went from MVP 1 year, Super Bowl, to out of the league within just a few years after that. You know, so I agree to an extent with what you're saying. You are rolling the dice with that kind of quarterback. And I saw somebody say, Michael, you know, said the mobile quarterback is, you know, the trend the NFL is going to. But the question is still going to be how long that trend lasts because of the health factor of these guys, the resiliency or the lack of resiliency.
I mean,
like Jalen Hurts is on top of the world right now.
But sure. All it takes so was Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. All it takes
so
is
was
one
Cam
hit,
Newton.
And that, like, yeah, and that changes real quickly.
Right. And here's the thing. Like, okay, who are the elite quarterbacks in the NFL right now? Josh Allen. Yes, he's a mobile guy, but he's not mobile like the guys we've just been talking about. Patrick Mahomes,
and
same
again,
thing.
He's built. Like, he's got
absolutely.
Muscle. He's got the body armor.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just go off that. Just tick off the top guys in the NFL. Yes, they can be mobile because they can run and they can get outside the pocket. But their primary, the primary thing that they're really good at is sitting in the pocket and picking you apart. That's right. What they're good at. Right? It's not the zone read and all of those different things. The elite quarterbacks are still pocket passers who can run, but that's not the name of the game for them. And right. So there has not been anyone that I can think of that has been a run first type of quarterback like Lamar, like Cam Newton, like all of the guys that you've described that have lasted 10, 15 years.
No, they haven't.
So until that happens, I still think they're a flash in the pan. You can harness it early, just like the Eagles are doing right now, but how long is that going to last?
And that's typically the trend. You know, like, they'll have a 3 or 4 year window early, and then either defenses catch on to them, they figure them out, and or injuries.
Right.
And their career is over with. And that's, yeah. So, but you know, like look at Kyler Murray. He got banged up last year as well, and he's an undersized guy. Like, how long is Kyler Murray gonna last?
Sure.
especially after they fired the coach who drafted him, you know, yeah, a year call. After they had just drafted another quarterback in the first round. And that's the other thing. Quarterbacks now in the NFL are more disposable than ever, unless you have a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or a Patrick Mahomes. Like, how many teams, like, you see more and more teams invest in a quarterback, and then within 1 or 2 years later, they're going out and getting another quarterback in the first round. And it just, and part of it is that the amount of money that you've got to pay once that rookie contract is over with, in addition to the wear and tear and the injuries.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, let's be honest. Baltimore is not extending the contract for whatever reason they've decided. Look, if they thought that he was going to be their quarterback for the next 10 or 15 years, they would probably invest in him. There's a red flag there somewhere, right? Yeah. Where they aren't sure that that's going to be the case.
Well, I'm sure that being his own agent doesn't help anything.
That doesn't help in any way, shape, or form. It just doesn't. I mean, you know, socks or no socks, you kind of need an agent.
Fill in the blank. Florida Atlantic is in the Final Four for the first time ever, and it's blank that their head coach, Dusty May, called out other teams for recruiting his players during the tournament, saying, quote, they've been recruited throughout this tournament, end quote.
I love it. I love it when a coach just comes right out and says what's going
on. Doesn't beat around the bush.
I freaking love it. And you know what? He's the underdog in this whole thing. He has zero to lose because he went to the Final Four. He's getting job offers. So he's good, right? Put this out there. Put this in the forefront, man. Like, I would have been happier if he was like, it's this school, this school, this school, this school.
Like, name names.
Name names, man.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I think it's great. And the fact that it made news because he did it is almost a little sad because that means it is so out there. Everybody's doing it, but that doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
So I love it.
I'm glad that he called him out as well. And I'm sure that all mid-majors have to deal with this. And in fact, I saw Muffet McGraw retweet, I think it was a Belmont women's coach's tweet about the same type deal.
I'm sure
their players had been recruited all season long, you know, not just during the tournament.
It's terrible.
This is going on all the time. And that's like between NIL and the transfer portal. This kind of stuff is out, you know. I mean, again, like just look at the stuff with DiNardo and Jordan Addison from Pittsburgh to USC last year. Remember, like,
yep,
all this stuff was going on and all this contact was being made before Addison's name was even in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Last year.
He had deals signed, deal delivered, man, before he was even in the portal. And you can say what you want to about the Pitt head coach, and I know Notre Dame fans don't like him. I think he's a bit of a weasel anyway.
But I do too, but he wasn't that's wrong. Like one thing I'll agree with him on.
Yeah, he wasn't wrong. Yeah, I mean, you're literally recruiting somebody off of his roster while the season's still going on. That's jacked up, man. That's messed up.
Exactly. And as Chi-Town says, sounds like tampering. There should be an NCAA investigation. Which there should, but I don't know what the NCAA prioritizes anymore.
Right.
I don't. So Providence Athletic Director Steve Napolillo is ticked off that Georgetown took his head basketball coach. Ed Cooley, of course, left Providence to go to Georgetown. He's ticked off because they're in the same conference. Here's what Napolillo says, quote, "I thought the Georgetown AD was a mentor to me and a friend. I understand the business, but I thought at the Big East we had something different. We had a respect. We had integrity. That's been completely thrown out the door. Should I be going out and hiring another Big East coach? We love the league too much to start that type of carousel," end quote. So does Napolillo, the Providence AD, have a fair point here, Vince, for being upset at Georgetown?
No. That the bottom answer is no. You don't have a point there. I can see where he's coming from. It's the little guy.
He's burned.
Ticked off.
Yeah.
He's burned. He got burned. And he's mad about it. You know, I'm sorry to all the Providence grads out there, but the Georgetown basketball coaching position, because of all the history and the tradition that comes with it, is a better job than the Providence head coaching job. And I know there's history with Providence as well. I get it. It's still a step up. And I don't know the particulars as to whether it was a huge pay increase or whatever, but it's a step up. And I've said it my entire life as a coach, if you can't be mad at somebody for taking a job where they bettered themselves, right, you know, whether it's a parallel job from name only, but a better program like Tommy Rees, that's a better job. Okay. Or whether it is an assistant to a head coach, you can't be mad about that. And I'm sorry that Steve is upset about that. Napolillo. But the bottom line is, Coach Cooley got a better job and he took it.
That's right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with the athletic director in a conference going out and finding a coach in the same conference.
Right.
He's got to fill the job with the best person possible for the job. And he obviously thought that Ed Cooley was a good person for the job. Now, you know, from what I understand, you know, like Providence was investing and they've got a nice, you know, basketball arena and all that. You know, they were investing good facilities out there, but the stature of Georgetown is still Georgetown versus Providence. And, you know, Georgetown, it's a program that ran the 80s basically, and they kind of live on that nostalgia a little bit, but they were still good into the 90s and kind of dabbled a little bit here and there in the 2000s. But, you know, just like
Notre Dame football.
Yeah, I was going to say, just like Indiana basketball, maybe a little bit of Notre Dame football, they feel like there's a history there and they want to get back to that. And they've tried it with these last few coaches. I mean, they went back to arguably their most iconic player, Patrick Ewing, and it didn't work out. And so now they're going to a guy who's got a track record of being a good head coach. Got to get the best guy for the job, and it doesn't matter what conference it's in. You know, I'm sorry, like you got your heart broken because you had to give him up. It doesn't matter if he's going in the same conference or not. Just like you said, Vince, Cooley's got a better job and their athletic director got a better coach.
Right.
You got to move on and do what you got to do now. You now, as Providence, you go hire the best coach you can find. And it shouldn't matter what conference he's in.
This is similar. Okay. You want to put a Notre Dame spin on it, right? Who, Doherty, when he was the head coach at Notre Dame for 1 year and everybody was all excited about it, he got offered the North Carolina job.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's his alma mater. It's a better job. It's, you know, the history, You just kind of got to tip your cap and hit the job pool again. I mean, it is what it is. That's the same conference. Well, I guess it wasn't the same conference back then, but still, it's a better job. Yeah.
There are some jobs that everyone's going to pack up and leave for. I guess the question is Georgetown still worthy, you know, of like being considered in that echelon? They from a success standpoint, they haven't been for what, the last 10 years or so. But again, they feel like they can get there, and they just need the coach to do it. So.
But isn't it one of those situations where if you can be the guy to bring them back to where you think that they should be, you're immortal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's just like if Marcus Freeman wins a national championship at Notre Dame, they're gonna have a statue. You know, you become immortal because you took that program back to where it was.
Yes.
If he does that at Georgetown, they're gonna have a statue for him there too. You know what I mean? So it's as a coach, you always think you have the answers, right? And you think you can be the guy to take that program to the next level. If you don't think you're that guy, then you're not doing it right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, Vince, one of the most famous plays in college basketball history took place 31 years ago today, which makes me feel ancient. Grant Hill threw the three-quarter court pass to Christian Laettner, who did a little dribble, did the turnaround shot at the buzzer to beat Kentucky to advance to the Final Four 31 years ago today. Wow. Do you remember when you first saw that play?
I'm pretty positive I did not see it live, okay? But I know that I saw that play over and over and over again at a very young age. So when it happened live, I was, 11 years old. I guarantee you I saw it before I was a teenager. You know what I mean? That has been an iconic play that I know like the back of my hand, right? I know where all the players were, and I don't like Kentucky or Duke, but that's just an iconic play. I mean, it just is, right? And yeah, I know I didn't see it live. I know I didn't, but I guarantee you I probably saw it, you know, very soon thereafter. Cause I did, I was an avid SportsCenter watcher. So okay. I'm sure that I saw it on SportsCenter.
SportsCenter was still really big back then.
Yeah. So, it was huge. It's the only way you got your sports news back in the day.
I know.
You had to sit there and watch the, cause it was like what, every hour, and it would just repeat. Mm-hmm. And as long as you had a half hour to an hour, man, you got all the sports news you needed before school. That's where I was.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I was working in a bar in Lawrence, Kansas.
Ooh.
When I was going to the University of Kansas, working in a bar called Big Daddy's. And it was on. And that's what everyone was into that game. I can't remember what night it was, but I remember watching it live. And just like you, I can't stand either program, Duke or Kentucky.
Right.
So it was like, who, you know, I wasn't cheering for anyone, but at the same time, it was just such a spectacular play. And it's obviously, you know, been, as you said, played over and over and over again since then. So I actually do have memory of seeing it live. So
that's crazy. When you're watching
years ago,
when you're watching a game that you don't have skin in, right? You have no skin in the game or whatever. You just want a good basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, like for me, whether, you know, betting aside, brackets aside, right? I always find myself rooting for a team. If I watch the entire game, I'll find myself rooting for a team. And so, you know, you get sucked into it, and that was a great game. I mean, the way that it ended, obviously, is iconic, but it was a great game. It was a back-and-forth game the whole time, if I remember correctly, and it was a great game. So, of course, you probably remember watching it. I just don't remember what I was doing when I was 11.
they went on and beat the Fab Five in
in
the championship.
That's right. Was that the timeout game?
That was the next year. The timeout game was when the Fab Five played North Carolina in the championship. Yeah. Yep. But that was iconic. back then.
Those
teams. And it's like, it just makes you, you know, like long for the days when guys actually played together for more than a year or two. Like,
yeah.
They were together, that group of guys. Like, yes. As much as I still loathe Duke, like that era when you had that group of guys, Grant Hill, Leitner, and Hurley, and those guys all together for 4 years. And, you know, like the Fab Five for that matter. And like the UCLA group with Tyus Edney and the O'Bannons and those guys that were all together. And, you know, like Corliss Williamson and the Arkansas group, Scotty Day and all those guys. It's like those whole groups played together. And that was just like so many good teams back then. I realize you were a young pup, but
no, but it's funny because it's funny the way your brain works. Like I remember Grant Hill more as a player for Duke than I do playing in the NBA. You know what I mean? Because he played for the Pistons, right? And so I never saw any of his games. You know, I saw the Bulls play. I saw the Pacers play, you know, that kind of a thing. And that's back when I watched the NBA, when it was like the 90s NBA. Like that was fun to watch, in my opinion. Grant Hill will always be a Duke player to me. He'll never be an NBA player. He'll always be wearing the blue and white.
Same with Christian Laettner.
Oh, 100% Christian Laettner. 100%. Yep. And I remember being ticked off that he made the Dream Team in 92.
Oh, I know.
I do. I remember a lot of people who were ticked off about that. And now that I think about it, I was 11. So there you go. And I remember being ticked off about it. So, you know, I was like, what is this scrub doing with all of these, like, future Hall of Famers? How does this work?
Yep. Michael said that he partied in Lawrence when he was stationed at Fort Riley.
There you go.
Which is between Junction City and Manhattan. And I lived in Manhattan when I was young, moved to Salina after that. My mom was born and my sister was also born in Junction City, which is on the west side of Fort Riley. And my wife is from Topeka. So Michael's been all over my old Kansas stomping grounds there at Fort Riley. My grandpa, I think I've said this before, my grandpa was, you know, he was career Army and his last duty station was Fort Riley. That's where my dad ended up in Kansas.
Makes sense.
And all that kind of stuff. So, yep. Back in the day. All right. Well, appreciate you joining us tonight. We've got a lot going on over the next couple of days. Oh, Tommy lost all credibility. I'll put it on the screen, but I'm not even going to say it. Come on, you're better than that. You can come up with something better than that. Michael says, Salina, I know a girl. Don't we all? All right, well, thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate you. We will talk to you tomorrow on Ivy Nation Sports Talk.